Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Well, this has ended up being quite an unusual episode that you're about to hear. It is, as you can see from when you press play, it's a much longer episode than a regular drift. And it's entirely devoted to something we've been talking to over the past couple of weeks, which is restaurant etiquette. We had somebody get in touch with us. The secret waiter is how they wish to be known. And we basically spent just over an hour chatting to him about restaurant etiquette and your questions. And this week's episode is that conversation. It's a long conversation. We decided not to edit it. I thought it was wonderful. Yeah. So you're going to hear that. And then we'll be back at the end with the podcations. Now, a couple of people did get in touch with me during the week saying, where were the podcations on last week's episode? And the honest answer is, I don't know. Something technical happened.
Which hiding.
It was undoubtedly my fault.
Oh, no.
But
hiding.
There was just sort of 3 minutes of silence at the end. So I'm sorry about that. I'm sorry to the people who had a podcast for last week, which, if I remember correctly, I was in tears at.
Yeah, yeah. So, you probably won't cry when we repeat
it. No, but we will dig it out again for the following week. We can't do it this week because we've got somebody else who needs one for this week. But we will do it again on next week's episode. But coming up next, it's our conversation and your questions for the secret waiter.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Well, I'm very excited about this. It is a special edition of Quandary Corner at the GLAP Clinic in Problematic. Annabelle, do you want to explain what's going on?
So we have on the line a secret waiter, an anonymous waiter, who is going to answer all the questions and quandaries about what we should and shouldn't be doing in restaurants. And we've already got loads of questions. So should we just...
Yeah, that's hello, secret waiter.
Hello.
Now, is that your real accent or are you putting on a voice to avoid detection?
No, there's no voice modulator. This is my actual accent.
But he would say that. He would say that. He would say
exactly.
Hanky over the phone.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have a handkerchief over the receiver of the phone?
I do too.
So you wrote in saying that you listen to this podcast and you feel you can be of service to the drifters.
Yeah, I feel there's kind of a few things have come up in the past where, you know, kind of listening at home, I've just thought, oh, I know the answer to that, or if only they knew, or, you know, I could kind of give a bit of insight there. And it kind of happens every so often. And eventually I was just kind of on the train one day and listening and thought, you know what, I'm just going to write in and offer my services. And if it can be of any help, then why not?
And how long have you worked in the restaurant trade?
So I started working in the restaurant industry when I was 17, because you could start at 17 back then. And I've been doing it ever since, on and off, for lots of different restaurants, sort of high-end restaurants and sort of middle of the road and low-end as well. And I'm still doing it now, and I'm kind of in my 30s. So good 10, 15 years worth of restaurant time.
And I love that you said low-end. Have you ever been in a restaurant which has had like an F-grade food hygiene rating?
I have to say, I've never been anywhere that bad.
Okay.
I've been in a few very popular restaurants where you can kind of buy very cheap meals, sort of, you know, get a full meal and maybe something on the side from the salad cart, shall we say, for sort of £5, £6. So I wouldn't say that the food quality there is low, but it's somewhere that, you know, your kind of average person is coming in to spend their money.
And something I worry about is using the phrase waiter or waitress. Is there, is there a better phrase I could be using? Last week we were saying, should we be saying server? But yeah. I don't know, that sounds like somebody who washes your feet or something.
That is very true. Within the industry, we tend to say waiter, waitress, or server. It's one of those. There isn't really a kind of politically correct way of going about it. I suppose server would be the most politically correct, but I don't know a waiter that hates being called a waiter or a waitress that hates being called a waitress. We're all quite happy.
And you shouldn't shout garçon.
No, garçon's not the best.
No, but nobody has ever shouted garçon at you, though.
They haven't. I've had people click their fingers at me before,
oh,
which is never appropriate. A few people have had a couple of sharp looks from me before for that sort of thing. And I had people that are very keen to use my name. That's something personally that I'm not overly happy about. A lot of restaurants will kind of introduce staff to the guest. You know, your waiter, such and such, will be over shortly. You know, if you need anything, let them know. And they'll quite often just keep saying your name over and over. You know, Jeff, can I get this, Jeff,
that's uncomfortable and over familiar, right?
It can be. It depends on how it's done. I mean, on the weekend just gone, actually, I was in a situation where I had a lady that asked my manager, could I come straight over to the table as soon as they sat, because she was ready to order. And when I got there, it was my name. You know, and I was like, okay, well, what can I get for you? Oh, well, we're not sure yet. What we're going to have is, and they kind of kept me waiting, and they were like, what would you recommend? My name. What would you recommend? Name. And it was constant the whole way through, and it became very over-familiar very clearly. It was almost like making a point of using my name. It got quite embarrassing. And at the end of the meal, another guest on the table used my name again, but a different guest, and she just said, oh, could we have the bill, please? And just dropped my name into the conversation. And it felt as natural as you like. And I was like, yeah, no problem. I'll just get that for you, my love. So it really does depend on how you go about it. It can sound a little bit sort of obnoxious almost if you overuse your server's name.
Yes.
Because they're not your friend. They're there to kind of help you through your evening.
I've had it before now where I've been in a restaurant and I feel like I've, for whatever reason, I've had good rapport with the waiter. Maybe, I think this has happened to me on holiday. So I've gone in a place and had good rapport with the waiter. And then at the end of the night, I'm getting my coat on, I'm ready to say goodbye. And I think we're going to have this moment. And it's like there was never any rapport between us. Or we've gone in a couple of nights later and he doesn't remember me. And then, you know, I feel a little personally affronted by that.
I can understand why. It's a strange relationship, isn't it? I think especially for British people, we have this whole kind of thing about class and, you know, kind of the way that we talk to each other and we interact. And, you know, we think of people sort of waiting on us. That's kind of a strange experience to have. Whereas in other countries, for instance, France, they would think nothing of that. That's quite a normal thing. So I do think there's kind of a heritage thing here as well that sort of changes our attitudes in the service industry. That definitely plays into it. But yeah, I mean, I know that there are tables that I really hit it off with and I really like them and I enjoy their company. And sometimes if they're regulars and you see them walk through the door, it can really brighten your day, especially if you're having a bad day. Mm. You go, oh, I know that table's going to be lovely. Their kids are polite. It's going to be a really nice time. You know, no problems. If I do make a little mistake, they're not going to make a big deal out of it. They'll be understanding and I'll sort it out for them. So people like that, you know, you can get genuine rapport. I've actually had people that have followed me around restaurants before now, from one to another, and that we've kind of crossed paths a few times and I know them by name and they know me and, you know, we know a lot about each other. So you do build up friendships sometimes. But then there is obviously the opposite end of that where you feel very familiar and actually is just kind of being put on. And at the end of the night, when the waiter's tired and just wants to close down and go home, they can sometimes let that slip.
I think that's
can
how it goes
be
for
quite
me.
Harsh.
That's exactly how it goes for me. I feel sad as well if by the time I'm ready to leave, they've gone on their break. I think I always make a
point as a waiter, if I'm covering somebody's section while they have a little break, I always make a point of saying to the table, just so you know, I'm going to be your server for the next hour or so. Your other waitress has gone on a break. If you need anything, let me know. And quite often, if they're tipping in some restaurants, if tips are not shared, if they go to the server, we kind of work it out around the midpoint. So if you've kind of taken them their food, if you've taken them their food, I mean, it's everywhere.
Because that's good to know, because that's something I've worried about in the past.
Yeah.
No disrespect to the fill-in waiter, but I wanted the one I had the rapport with to get the tip.
Yeah, no, that makes complete sense. I mean, quite often, most restaurants that I've worked in and most people I know within the industry, the kind of general rule is if you take out the mains and you're kind of doing the sauces, desserts, coffees, the sort of latter half of the meal, the tip normally would go to you. Some people would share that tip. So they would just say, I'll take a couple of pounds for clearing the table and looking after them. The rest is yours. Or they'll ask the waitress, do you mind if we split it? Or they'll even say, here's your tip from X table while you're on your break. And they'll say, babe, you keep that, or let's go halves or whatever. So it all depends really on the actual sort of incident itself.
Now,
we
have so many. I personally have so many questions, but I don't want to tread on the toes of any of the drifters. So, Annabelle, what's the first one?
Okay, Sarah needs your help. She says, a weird thing happened in a branch of a well-known pizza chain at the weekend. Five of us headed there after the cinema at about 6 on a Sunday. We've not been to this branch before, and I didn't know.
Is it in Woking?
And I didn't know how busy it was likely to be. So as we approached, I was relieved to see that only a couple of tables were occupied. We went in and waited to be shown to a table and waited. There were quite a few staff around, only one serving customers, but they seemed oblivious to our presence. Time ticked by. We looked at each other, perplexed. Eventually, someone came over and I asked for a table for five. The waitress asked if we'd booked. I replied no. I stepped forward, expecting to be shown straight to a table. But the waitress studied the computer, then gazed round at the many, many free tables, then back at the computer. She did this repeatedly, her manner suggesting that this was the most difficult problem she'd ever grappled with. We looked at each other. Can she see what we can see? About 50 free tables. We were stifling giggles at this point, but I was also beginning to feel paranoid. Did we smell? Did we look like we had a horrible contagious disease? I thought we looked like the most unthreatening group you could ask for. Five people aged between 11 and 70, completely sober. What's wrong with us? The waitress kept looking at the empty tables, almost as if she could see crowds of people when there were none. This was getting awkward. The silence was deafening. I couldn't make eye contact with any of the family in case I started uncontrollably laughing. She studied the computer again. She contemplated the empty restaurant. The silence continued. The tension was palpable. Our nerves were at breaking point. Would she give us a table? At that moment, the only thing I wanted in the world was the opportunity to spend my Tesco Club Curve vouchers on pizza. Eventually, she reached a decision and said she would put two tables together for us. When this was done, we were called over to a pretty cramped table in the corner right next to the till. The only worse table was next to the toilets. We gazed out at the sea of empty tables in front of us. Maybe they had a lot of bookings tonight, we thought. Or maybe they expect to get really busy soon and are short-staffed. However, in the hour we were there, only two more groups came in. And as we left, we glanced at the computer and saw only two bookings. There were loads of staff. We spent the whole meal trying to work out what had just happened. Do you have any idea, secret waiter?
Right, I do. I have many an idea.
Oh.
Many of which have already been kind of crossed off the list. The first one would have been if you're going in quite late and it's near closing time. If it's been a very quiet shift, they may decide to close an hour or two early because they're going to save more money on staffing costs, sending people home, than they are by sitting you down and taking money for your dinner. Okay. It doesn't sound like that was the issue.
No.
Because of the time.
Yep.
The other thing that was mentioned was maybe if there were lots of bookings expected, that would be another reason. Quite often people will come into the restaurant and say, we'd like a table. Sorry, we haven't got anything available, but you've got loads of empty tables. Well, I'm afraid they're already taken or they're allocated or, that sort of thing. But again, doesn't sound like that was the issue. Could be My most likely ones to go to here would either be they were short-staffed in the kitchen, so it could be that they weren't actually able to cater to too many people at once, and some restaurants will actually politely try and turn people away rather than have them dine and wait an hour or more for food, have a bad experience that they're then going to share with others.
Right.
So that could have been the case. I'd be interested to know if the food took quite a while to come out as well, although that obviously wasn't mentioned. And the other thing it could have been would be possibly that the member of staff was a new trainee. She wasn't quite sure about the booking system, and she was kind of fretting about where to sit people. Is it okay to sit them down? Is it not? But to be honest, with that many free tables, you just sit them down and work around it later. So those would be the things that would most commonly jump to mind for me.
So is it possible that spite was at play? Because I feel that sometimes I'll go into a restaurant and I'll get sat on a lousy table near the toilet when it's a quiet night. There aren't that many bookings. I can see there are other. It's not just like this one zone of the restaurant has waiters in it. In fact, I remember once going into this restaurant in New York with my wife and her parents, and they've got these lovely booths. And it was one of these no reservations places. So I said, would it be possible to have a booth, please? And they said, oh, no, I'm sorry. No, we can't sit you in a booth. I said, why not? They said, oh, we don't take reservations, but somebody came in and asked about a booth. And it just felt to me like they were lying, like they didn't want to give me the booth. So we sit at this table and we're there for a long old evening. The booth is empty the whole time we're there, more than 2 hours. And I can't concentrate on my food because I'm just glaring at the maitre d'. Is there an element of power play ever goes on with this sort of allocating of tables?
There can be. It's normally not out of spite as such. It's more a case of looking at staffing levels, because restaurants are businesses. Quite often, if I'm left by myself, other staff get sent home because it's a quiet night, and then we get a rush out of nowhere. You will quite often get people wanting preferential seats. We'd like to sit here. We'd like to sit over there. But if you're only one body and you're trying to give service that's of a good quality to lots of people, it actually helps if people are in the same sort of area,
right,
so that you can keep a quick eye over your section and see exactly what's going on across all of your tables. Mm. If you've got two people sat at the very back of the restaurant, one person in the booth over on the right, someone else down by the front door, someone else in the bar, it can be really hard to keep an eye on everybody at once. But, you know, I think most places would always try and sit you where you would like to sit. There are some people that are just stubborn and they don't want to sit you where you want to sit. They'd prefer you to be in the area that they want you to be in. But I wouldn't say that's particularly professional. Normally, if I'm in that sort of position and I insist that, you know, the back of the restaurant is closed now, it's not so much out of spite. It's more out of, I want to have a good handle on what's going on so that I can make sure you have a good experience. And you're much more likely to have a good experience sat in this area where I can see what's going on and be on top of it than sitting in the table that you want, but you're away from everybody else and you might get forgotten or you might get overlooked or you might wait a little bit too long.
What goes on when you ring up a restaurant for a special occasion? It's a nice restaurant. It's got a beautiful view. Mm-hmm. Perhaps of the sea or a river or a skyline or something. You're arranging a special occasion, so you're calling up months in advance. You say, do you have a table for two on this evening? They say, yes. I say, would it be possible to request a table next to the window with a view? And they say, oh, we can put a note down, but we can't guarantee that. I think, I'm ringing you 3 months in advance. Why can't you guarantee that? Why is that up to the maitre d' on the day?
Yeah, that, to be honest, is really just to cover yourself. It really shouldn't be a problem, and most places wouldn't have a problem with sitting you like that and allocating you the seats that you've asked for, especially if it's that far in advance. It's just a case of, if, for instance, a situation arose where, you know, that note got misplaced or it got removed from the booking system, or somebody sat somebody else on that table because they didn't check the booking system before they sat them, and then you turn up expecting your table that you asked for 3 months ago, you will get people that, you know, quite rightly perhaps would kick off about that. So at least if you said, we'll do our very best to sit you there, but we can't guarantee it, you're kind of putting in a little bit of a cushion there to kind of sort of protect yourself and cover your back.
And also, I suppose, like, what if Samantha Janus and her husband came in one night, and, you know, just, and then they get the preferential treatment for being VIPs?
Of course, that does happen. That does happen. Depending on how classy the restaurant is, there's definitely a little bit of that at play.
Is it the more classy the restaurant, the more of that at play?
Possibly. It depends. It depends. It really depends on the culture of the restaurant. You will get some places and some brands that are quite snooty. And, you know, the way they are perceived is everything about kind of how popular they are and how much business they do. But most places, even, you know, kind of high street chains, if they've got nice views and things, wouldn't have much of a problem of kind of allocating you those seats. The restaurant I'm in at the moment has booth seating, which as servers, we all find quite uncomfortable, but people love to sit in it. So quite often they will come in and say, we'd like that booth. And it might be two people and it's for a table of six. Mm. On a busy Saturday night, I can't sit two people on a table of six because I need to fit in as many people as I can.
Yeah.
It is difficult. And it's one of those things, everyone's got a preference. Everyone likes something different, and it's trying to weigh up what the guest wants with the giving them the best experience. And unbelievably, sometimes those two things actually don't go together. And it's quite hard walking that tightrope sometimes.
I used to go for Sunday lunch in this restaurant in quite a nice area of London. The woman who ran it was called Fiona. And I remember going in there one Sunday, and it was already half one, it was completely empty. So me and my then girlfriend and my brother had the only table in the place. Mm-hmm. This gang of sort of Hooray Henrys in red chinos, sort of made in Chelsea types, come in. And as they walk in, they go, well, I don't think we'll have any difficulty getting a table in here. And she just looked at them and went, sorry, lads, fully booked. So quite admired her for that.
I've definitely seen similar things happen. Yes, I have definitely seen similar things happen. We've had bookings before where people have come into different restaurants, and if they've been absolutely awful guests, if they've been really rude to staff, or if they've been abusive, or if they've not, you know, if they've argued about paying their bill, those sorts of things, I have seen before where guests have actually been blocked. So that if that phone number calls up again for a booking, they're just automatically refused. So it does happen. There is some of that at play, but most places, it's not a slight against anybody personally. But it can happen. It can happen.
All right, Annabelle, do we have another one?
Yes. So Roz says, do you say goodbye when leaving a restaurant? Is it like leaving a tip? A scale from cheery goodbye if you enjoyed your meal to skulking out silently if it was terrible? Or is it basic manner to say goodbye anyway? I never know where to say goodbye.
I think it's lovely when people say goodbye.
Okay.
It's hard. It depends. I mean, again, it depends on that rapport. If you've had a nice time with your server and you feel you've had a nice evening together, you know, they've looked after you, you've gelled quite well and the conversation has flown at times, you know, it's lovely to say goodbye. I actually had a gentleman the other week, a gentleman and three friends came in for dinner. Really nice, really polite. We had a lovely time. He was very complimentary. And at the end of the meal, he came over to me while I was cleaning a table and said, thanks very much. Said my name and said, we've had a lovely evening. Thank you very much for your service, and shook my hand. And that was lovely. And for me, if they hadn't even left a tip, that would have been enough. That was so nice to be appreciated for the effort that I put in to making sure they had a nice experience. You know, other people will just sort of say a cheery goodbye as they leave and sort of throw their hand up. We're always told to say goodbye as guests leave to, you know, kind of finish off the experience. But you can always tell when someone says thank you or goodbye in return, and it's genuine and you feel good that you've helped them have a nice evening. That always makes a big difference. Yeah, definitely.
Have you ever had that thing where somebody's shaken your hand and slipped you like a £10 note at the same time?
Yep, that's happened. Yeah, it's happened quite a few times.
Oh, how do you feel when that happens?
Again, it depends on the restaurant. I always feel I feel a little bit awkward at times. I think sometimes people do it because they're insistent that you receive the tip personally.
Yes.
Which I always take as a great compliment. But it always makes me feel a little bit awkward if I know that I'm going to get the tip anyway. And then I almost feel awkward on their behalf that they felt that I wouldn't get it, if that makes sense. But it's very complimentary when you know that someone is that concerned about you receiving the tip that they come up to you personally and give it to you in your hand. But again, it's just that gratitude. You know, a lot of servers out there work very hard. I mean, there are always a few bad eggs, but a lot of people out there work very hard to make sure you have the nicest evening possible or the nicest experience possible. And when someone is that kind of grateful afterwards, it does make you feel good about your job. It kind of reminds you why you do it.
That often is a big worry with me, that the person who I've been served by the most in an evening isn't going to get the tip. But I very, very rarely have cash on me. So I have to sort of leave it up to the restaurant to make sure it's distributed properly.
Yeah, tipping's an awkward one. I mean, it's kind of been in the media quite a bit over the last sort of year or two.
Yes.
I mean, there have even been kind of political promises made about it by different parties and things. My general rule as a server working in the industry, if you're really bothered about your waiter or waitress getting a tip, take cash with you. They will always receive cash. If you leave cash on a table, they can pick it up, they can put it in their pocket, they can take it home with them at the end of the night, if that's their tipping policy.
But what if one of the other people, you know, so you get the people who are the waiters, then you get the people who do just clear the plates, and then, you know, then you're not supposed to order from those people, you know, there's this whole hierarchy thing. What if they take away the tray with the money and then put it in the shed? I want the person who's serving me, if service is included, I want that person to know what a generous tipper I am.
Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things. It will depend on the restaurant. There are several different ways that tips are run within the industry. Most places that I have worked personally, we don't share tips. In fact, the vast majority of places don't share tips, in the sense of it all going into one central pot and then being redistributed. Mm. That's quite rare. It does happen, but it's quite rare. What happens most of the time is that servers are responsible for their own cash handling, which means the company money that they take, as well as their tips. And at the end of the night, once they've given the company the money that they owe for the tables they've cashed off and that they've served, anything that's left over is theirs. And what normally happens is a cut of that is then taken out as a percentage, and that is then shared with the bar for making the drinks, with the busses and the runners for running the food, and quite often, as it should be, with the kitchen for preparing the food. So some places that's 20%, some places it's 40%, some places it's different distributions for different areas, 10 for the bar, 10 for the kitchen, 5 for the buses. So it really depends. When it comes to credit card tips, some companies directly give every single penny of those tips to the individual server by the ID on their sort of server ID as it goes through the till system. Some places will take the credit card tips out of the company's cash and redistribute it as cash to the server. Some places will take it, put it into their wages, which then means it gets taxed. And sometimes the company will take a cut of that as well. So they will take a cut for breakages, things like broken plates.
And this is the stuff where the ethics of this have been talked about a lot. Sort of recently.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, this is where it's going to get very complicated. And some restaurants have now changed their policy from what it used to be to saying, well, now our servers get all the money that they're given. And that then means that people think, oh, everywhere I go, the server gets the credit card tip. And that quite often is not the case. It's a very kind of fraught situation at the moment. But as a rule of thumb, if you're somebody that really cares about your server getting the tip, if you take cash with you, whether it be a couple of quid, £5 note, a few tenners, whatever it is you're going out for, if you've got it in your pocket, they will get it. And it's up to them whether they then put it in the pot or whether it goes to them, etc.
Here's something I worry about. If I get the bill and it says service charge included, so say there's 12.5% included, so there's the total that I pay. If, let's just for argument's sake, say it's £100 bill, just to make the maths easy. So it comes to £112.50, right? So I pay that on the credit card. If I then have some cash in my pocket and think, oh, I'm going to leave an extra fiver for the waiter, I worry that the waiter thinks that I don't know the service was included, and then I've just left a really lousy tip of sort of less than 5%. Is that me panicking overthinking it?
A little bit. Most servers would just be grateful to have the cash tip, because, as I say, the cash is very much kind of under the server's control. So, you know, some companies, the same thing happens with credit card tips as happens with service charges. You won't see a service charge, or you'll see sort of 5-10% of it come back to you in your wages, and the rest goes to the company. So it all depends on the institution itself. But if you were to maybe be in that situation, what I would do from experience would be, you know, oh, thanks very much for your service today. I know we've paid the service charge, but you've been great. Here's a little something for yourself. Grab yourself a drink.
Jerry's got a question about this. He says that my wife and I have an ongoing debate about restaurant cafe tipping etiquette regarding small change. If I say, if you're leaving a tip, then you can clear out some shrapnel by adding on whatever small change you want to get rid of. So, for example, if you're going to tip £5, then why not make it £5.16 or £5.23 or even £5.01 if you want? It's all just money in their shared tip pot. My wife says, no, leaving any coin less than £1 is an insult and she won't let me do it. Would love to hear your opinions.
So I would say leaving any coin less than £1 is an insult if the total is going to be less than a pound. If it's going to be £5.21, most servers would just be taking the £5.21. They'll have seen £5 and think, wow, I've made £5 off that table. That was a nice tip. And the extra can just go in their slow or go in their change or into the sort of shared tip pot. So I think it depends on the amount. I've quite often had tables where they've kind of had a £200-£300 bill. Service, in my opinion, has been good. They've not complained. They've not moaned. They've not waited for anything. And then at the end of the night, they've left me the change from the £300, which is, you know, £1.20. And quite often I will make a point of taking that back to the table and saying, thanks very much, guys. There's your change. And if they say, oh, no, that's for you, keep it, I'll say, no, no, I insist. And I will leave it on the table.
That's a nice way of dealing with that.
I always try to be polite, but to me, that would be an insulting tip. If it's a £300 bill and someone leaves £5, it's nowhere near 10%. But you know what? Thanks very much. I appreciate that. Right. So, you know, everyone's budget is different. What everyone can afford is different. There is no server now that expects to make 10% on every table. We average between 6 and 7%, depending on the kind of evening and the sort of area that you work in.
My jaw has dropped at that. So, I mean, I would have thought 10% was the bare minimum. Like, I will... If it's not a service charge, if it's just a sort of tip, I will always tip closer to 20%. I mean, not I'm trying to get some credit from you here, but people tip less than 10%.
Oh, yes, very often. It depends. It really does depend. I mean, I've worked in restaurants where I've made £150, £200 a night in tips alone, just from kind of 10 tables all night, just turning them all the way through the night, you know. And I've maybe taken £2,500, £3,000 for the company, and I've walked out with £200 in my pocket, plus some maybe credit card tips. So, you know, you're getting near to the 10% there. But for every table that will leave 10 or 15%, you will have one that will leave 6 or 7. And you know, again, it does come down to the level at which you're serving. If you're in a very high-end restaurant with people that have got a lot of money, they're not even going to consider it. 10%, as you say, is the bare minimum. 20% if they want to flash the cash. If you're in a kind of run-of-the-mill sort of pizzeria on the street or a big company or a chain, people start to watch their pennies a little bit more, you know, especially since the kind of... not the depression, but a few years ago when we all kind of hit hard times, the credit crunch, that's right. People have watched their pennies more. And if they haven't really got the money to go out for dinner in the first place, and they're kind of scraping that £50-60 to kind of go out and treat themselves to dinner, you know, it might be a birthday meal that they wouldn't have gone out for, but they've been invited and they feel rude if they don't go. So, you know, we're going to go. They then don't want to leave another £6-7 on top for what they feel maybe is someone's job. £2 or £3 is a thank you. It's a polite thank you, but it's obviously not the 10%. And most servers now, as a result of that, in my opinion, from what I see and the people I talk to in the industry, we don't really expect to make 10%. If you make 10% at the end of your night from the money you've taken for the company, you'd be quite happy.
Wow. I think like when I've been skint, I've just sort of thought, well, the 10% is the bare minimum. So if I can't afford the 10%, then, you know, I'll meet you for a drink or I won't go out or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm really surprised. Are you surprised by that?
I am quite surprised. Yeah, I thought everyone gave 10%.
And you're quite
minimum.
Tight. I mean, yeah, you're a tight person.
I know.
I'm very generous.
I mean, I don't pay more than 10%. I'm sorry.
All right, what's next?
Okay, let's go back to Roz. She says, if a member of staff asks how you are, are you obliged to ask how they are? In normal conversation, I would, of course, ask how someone is, but that is usually because I know them and I want to have a friendly interaction with them. So do we say, how are you back? What are we supposed to do?
Yeah, I mean, most of the time I'll kind of start with the table and say, you know, good afternoon, evening, guys. How are you today? You'll obviously get the sort of obligatory, oh, we're good, thank you. Most people will then say, and how are you? And I'll just go, yeah, great, thanks. what can I get for you today? And it's kind of straight into kind of the business side of things, especially if it's busy. You may find if it's a quiet day, your server's quite happy to stand and have a chat. And they will kind of stop and say, oh, do you know what? I'm all right, thank you. It's been a bit quiet and, you know, we've not had many tables in. What have you been up to today? Have you been off to the museum or have you been off to see the show or whatever it is that's kind of going on at that time? So, you know, kind of you can be guided by the server. But, I mean, by all means, ask. It's just polite. If you were going to do it in regular conversation, feel free to ask your server.
Okay.
They'll make it quite clear if they want to stop and have a chat. Or if they sort of need to sort of be polite and breeze on by because they've got things to do.
Okay.
So I would worry about that. I would worry about eating into your time.
Mm-mm.
I'd also worry that, you know, what if there was a follow-up question and I didn't have good small talk, didn't have good waiter banter?
The thing I would say is that as a kind of general rule for kind of drifters especially is no matter how many times in your life you eat out, you could eat every single meal of your life out for the rest of your life in a restaurant. You are never going to go through that process as many times as a server has. And you're never going to experience it with so many different types of people, with so many different types of needs from different countries, different cultures, different languages, different cuisines. So in general, your server's got it covered. They will move around you. They'll kind of pick up the cues from you of what you need and they'll kind of fill in the spaces as necessary. I know if I'm really busy, I'll keep the small talk to a minimum. I know how to kind of shut a conversation down politely quite quickly if I need to get on with the business of what can I get you? I need to move on to the next table. And if I've got the time and I want to have the chat, I will make sure that you know that and I'll kind of provide the opportunities for you to have that sort of wider open, more open conversation. So in general, kind of relax on that one. Don't worry, your server's got you. If they know what they're doing, sit back, relax, and let them take care of it. Don't worry about it too much.
Okay. Roz also wants to know, is it obnoxious to ask for chopsticks in an East Asian restaurant if you've been given a fork?
I wouldn't say so, no. I would expect there to be some chopsticks on site. I think normally in that sort of situation, most of the time a fork is provided because that's what they're thinking the guest is going to need or going to feel most comfortable with. I wouldn't say it's obnoxious.
Okay.
It would depend on the server. If it was someone in an East Asian restaurant sort of from that culture and from that style of cuisine, they'd probably be quite happy to see you eat it authentically. So they probably wouldn't sort of sneer down their nose at you. They'd kind of think, oh, that's good. Someone's going to make some effort.
You look professional.
So no, I wouldn't say it's obnoxious.
Okay, good.
So I've had it the other way around where I've got this weird thing where I don't like eating off wood, unfinished wood, because it gives me goosebumps. So I've been in a Chinese restaurant or a Japanese restaurant where they've given me chopsticks, but they're unvarnished wood. And then I have to ask for a fork. But I want to try and convey, I'm not asking for a fork because I'm culturally ignorant. It's because I don't like the texture of wood on my tongue. But it's very difficult to explain that in a way that doesn't make the person serving you think that you're insane.
I would agree with you there. That's quite a hard one to convey concisely. I can get where you're coming from, though. But the thing is, again, they've seen it a million times. You're not going to be the first person
right.
to come in that day asking for a fork.
I know, but I don't want to be one of those people. You know, the usual type of people
who
are asking for a fork.
Yeah, it's very easy, I suppose. I mean, I know that sometimes I sort of lump people into groups quite quickly from certain things, you know, and you kind of go, oh, they want this, what a surprise, you know. So it does happen, but you can always kind of counter that later with something else. So, for instance, if you feel like you've kind of made yourself one of those people, if you're then very complimentary about the food when they come back later, that might sort of soften it to, oh, actually, you know, they've really enjoyed the experience.
Right.
So, you know, maybe they just struggled with the chopsticks.
Right.
You know, so, you know, don't sort of panic about it. But there are ways of kind of, it's not a zero-sum game. If you take away from somewhere, you can kind of give back somewhere else.
Right.
Okay, let's move on to Gordon. He's got a lot of questions. The first one is about booking. What's the etiquette for making a booking when there is no online booking service available? I often feel like my telephone call is an unwanted intrusion and the staff member would rather be doing anything other than talking to me. Am I calling at the wrong time of day? Are they looking for some polite small talk before I get around to the business of the day? How can I make this interaction less awful?
That's a tricky one.
Oh, is it? Okay.
It's a tricky one. Yeah, as a server, quite often answering phone calls can be a real pain.
I do get the impression when they answer phones, yeah. You get the vibe, yeah.
I mean, you certainly shouldn't get that vibe. I would say that's not very professional on the part of the server if you're getting that vibe, but yeah. I can understand how it happens. You could be in the restaurant for 8 hours working your shift, and it could be absolutely dead all day, and you won't take a single phone call. And then the one moment when it starts to get busy out of the blue, that's when the phone starts ringing. It's almost supernatural. And it doesn't matter what time of the day it is. It always seems to be when you're at your busiest that the phone call comes through, and it's just another thing to juggle into your sort of flow of service. It's a difficult one, that one. I mean, most of the time, as long as you're polite and friendly on the phone and you're quite clear about what you need, most servers will kind of get through that call quite quickly and sort of hopefully meet your needs.
Okay. More questions. What is the appropriate response when one member of your party decides to take charge of the process of taking orders and point to each person in turn silently to indicate that it's their turn to tell the waiter what they want? Is there a secret signal I can give to the waiter to indicate how sorry I am and that I know they are perfectly capable of eliciting this information without assistance?
Interesting. I personally, as a server, find that really irritating. Those people really irritate me.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get to know my guests. And if you're going to put yourself between me and the rest of the table, you're making the meal about yourself. You're not making it a group experience. And I find that really hard to deal with. If I can't talk to people and I can't have a little chat with them about their food, it's very hard to get a grasp on who they are, what they like. And the sort of experience that they're going to need. I think as a guest that can be quite irritating as well. You almost feel like you're being bossed around by a school teacher rather than actually enjoying your meal with your friends. I mean, a little eye roll never goes amiss.
That's what I do. I think, you know, you can tell a lot about a person. In fact, almost everything about a person by the way they treat a waiter. But yeah. If I am with somebody in a group who I feel isn't doing a good job of that, I'll try and catch the eye of the server and do a little eye roll. So that goes down well, does it?
It does, because you know your friend can be a bit irritating. We've met lots of people like your friend that's a bit irritating. So we know it, you know it, they don't know it, that's fine. Little eye roll, that's enough. Or sometimes a genuine smile as you pass your menu back.
Right,
to the server. Thank you. You know, with a little sort of wink or a nod, always goes amiss. You'll find quite often you'll receive one back from the server if you're in that sort of situation.
Right.
A sort of a mutual understanding of, wow, they're a bit full on.
Right.
It all depends on the situation, but I've definitely been in that experience a lot of times.
Okay.
I can appreciate that one.
Is it weird if my wife and I order the same thing?
No, not at all.
Right. Oh, good.
I would worry about
that. Yeah, me too. I've always worried about that. I'm being boring.
Might be the best thing on the menu.
Okay, good. Right.
What if, and I'm not at this point in my life at the moment, but I have been, what if I ordered two main courses? Would you judge me?
That was the next question.
No.
Do waiters ever judge you for ordering too much food?
The restaurant I'm in at the moment, we get quite a lot of tourists. So language barrier can sometimes be a little bit of a problem. And I quite often get people coming in ordering three or four main meals for a table of two. And now it's happened so often, I'm aware of it and I kind of guess why it's happening. They want to try a little bit of everything because they're maybe only going to be there once.
Right, right.
And they want to experience a little bit of this and a little bit of that. So I kind of understand that now. But because of the language barrier, it can be quite awkward sometimes where you have to kind of go, you do understand that you're ordering four main meals for two people, and that's not so much a judgment, it's just I'm checking I've got this right.
But you've got to be careful that people don't feel like they're being food shamed.
Exactly, because if these four meals come over and you only wanted one or two of them, you know, my boss is going to be annoyed at me for the food wastage. So it's one of those where you have to kind of, you know, it's not a judgment, it's more about I'm just clarifying that we are only having one meal to share between two people, or we are having four meals to share between two or three. But normally there's not judgment there. If anything, your server's quite happy if you're buying more food, because if they're kind of on a point system, or they're trying to upsell, or they're being told to upsell by their boss, if you've got two covers, that's two guests sitting at a table, and they're buying four meals, your spend per head goes way, way, way up. So your average for the day will look much better to your boss. It looks like you're doing your job better. You're selling more food to the people that are in the restaurant. And that can only be a positive.
Have you got any questions on recommendations?
No.
So what about when a waiter says, oh, I'll just tell you my favourite thing on the menu is ... And I always feel like I'm rejecting them if I then don't order that. It's an insult.
It depends on how you do it. I mean, it depends. I quite often get people that come in and say, I'm thinking about having this or I'm thinking about having that. You know, it's kind of between these two dishes. What do you think? And quite often, if it's in that situation, I'll give a genuine, honest opinion, because I think, well, you already pretty much know what you want, and I'm going to nudge you towards what I think is the slightly better option. If they then turn around and say, oh, do you know what? No, I am just going to go with the other thing. There is a little bit of, well, why did you ask me then? You're obviously capable of making up your own mind.
Right.
But if someone just says to me, I've got no idea what I want, what do you think? And I suggest something and they go, oh, I don't really like that. Then obviously, well, I didn't know that, so I'm not going to take that personally. You know, quite often people will say, I'm going to have this. Is it any good? And I go, well, do you like spicy food? I don't know you. So if you like spicy food, then yes, it's going to be a great thing for you to eat. If you don't, then no. So, you know, the more of an idea you can give me as your server of what you like, the better I can guide you. And if you don't want to take that guidance, that's absolutely fine. That's your prerogative. You're the guest. There's normally not a judgment in that situation, but if someone's very kind of insistent on, I need your feedback, and then they sort of flip-flop the other way, you just kind of think, why did you ask me?
And what about if you're reading out the specials, and I can hear that you're reading a load of meaty things. I'm sitting there as a vegetarian. Do I just politely listen to them, or should I say, oh, just to let you know, I'm veggie, so that I'm not wasting your time?
You can do. I mean, normally, if it's a special, they're being read out to every table. So the waiter's kind of got their patter down. They're ready to go. They're going to get through it quite quickly anyway, and they're ready to go.
Right.
So you can just sit politely and listen.
That's what
and
I tend
even
to
add
do.
You can even add at the end, oh, actually, I'm vegetarian, so I won't be going for that dish, but the other one sounds great. Or, oh, thanks very much. Thanks for letting us know. So, you know, I think that's perfectly fine and polite.
Okay.
But, you know, if you did want to interject and say, to be honest, we've sort of looked at the specials and there's not really anything we want there, the waiter will be quite happy to kind of move on to the next thing.
Is it better to point at an unpronounceable item on the menu or to have a go and see what happens?
Depends on how confident you're feeling. If you're feeling a little bit sassy, always go for it, because a waiter will get great enjoyment out of watching you say it wrong.
Yeah,
and they'll normally have a little joke with you about it afterwards. So if you give it a real kind of a bit of gusto and really go for it and completely mess it up, no one is going to judge you. We're all going to be happy that you gave it a go.
Okay.
If you're really not sure though, and you're feeling quite embarrassed about saying it, just point. Absolutely fine. Or even start it off. Quite often you'll find that if you start off the dish, you know, so for instance, lasagna al forno, if you're worried about saying al forno, as soon as you say lasagna, your waiter will pop in and go, oh, the lasagna, great. Or the lasagna al forno, they'll finish the sentence for you. So as long as you give them a good indication of what the dish is, they'll probably kind of finish it off for you. If you're not sure and you're worried, always just check, is there anything else on the menu that looks the same, that sounds similar? And if the first few words definitely don't sound like any of the other dishes, then you're fine, because they're going to know which one you mean just from the very first couple of sounds.
Is it weird when people read out the whole description of the thing? My mum does this.
Yes,
if I ever go. She'd go, oh, can I have the roast beef with the Yorkshire pudding and the mixed seasonal veg in a gravy sauce?
It's incredibly weird. It's incredibly weird. Yeah. I don't understand. I know what the food is. I work here. And I'm glad that you know what you're eating. You've chosen it for that reason. But you don't need to tell me what's in the dish, because I've had many a test on it.
Oh. Okay, using the facilities, is there a best or worst time to go?
Not really.
Oh, go whenever you want.
Yeah, go whenever you want. Just hopefully they're being maintained well. It always seems to be when I'm at my very busiest and someone wants to pop to me while I'm in the middle of taking an order and say, just to let you know, there's no toilet roll in the ladies' loo. No worries, I'll get right on that. So it always seems to be at that point when you're busiest. But if the toilets are well maintained, go whenever you want.
But what about bringing the food out then? Are you using those things, what are they called, cloches, that go over the top of the plates to keep them warm? Like
I haven't used the cloche. So in general, most restaurants, and again, every place is slightly different, most places within the industry have set times for starters and mains coming out. So once you've ordered your food, if you know you need the loo, you've got a good 10-minute window there where you can get to the loo and get back before your starter's going to arrive. Unless the restaurant's completely dead, in which case, maybe 8 minutes. So if you know you need the loo, my advice is either go before you order or order and then go before the starter arrives.
Once the starter's arrived,
you're set.
That's my technique. Always order, then go to the loo. What about, like, this has happened to me a couple of times. When a restaurant doesn't feel like it's operating at its optimum level, when you can see your food on the pass?
See, what I would say here is, if you're the guest and you're not having a very good experience and waiting for the food too long is part of that experience, my personal advice would be to sit tight. Because then when that food arrives, it's not going to be up to par. And any server worth their salt is going to come over and do a 3-bite check. They're going to come over and say, how's your food, guys? Is it all okay? And that's your point to say, to be honest with you, no, it's not. It's really cold. And actually, I did spot it sitting up there for quite a while. Would it be possible to get it cooked fresh?
God, I mean, you know, I don't know that I'd be able to say that.
It takes quite a lot of confidence to do that. I feel like if you see the food waiting, and it comes to the table and it's not up to par, you've then got grounds to complain 100%. And you should feel confident to say, to be honest, it's not quite as hot as I would have liked. And any good server will jump in there and say, oh, I'm so sorry. Would you like me to warm it through? Would you like a fresh dish? Would you like me to change it for something else on the menu? Mm. Rather than sort of saying, oh, excuse me, I think our food might be up there. Because it may be a case that genuinely they haven't been able to get there in time. And quite often a good server, if they know the food has been sitting there for a while, they will take that into their own hands and say, this needs recooking, or I need you to flash fry this again, or this needs warming through. Can we check the temperature and make sure the food is up to standard? So that's a tricky one. There's a lot involved there, surprisingly, for what seems like quite a simple thing. My advice there would be, let the problem evolve, because then once it is a definite problem, you've kind of got really solid grounds for making a complaint. Whereas if you sort of preempt that the food might sit there a bit longer, people might think, all right, I'm getting to you. Give me a second.
Right.
And then it can make things a little bit fractious. That's probably where I'd kind of stand on that one. But that's not a given rule for everything.
What was it you said about the 3 bites? Do you wait for 3 bites before checking if the food's okay?
Yeah, so it's kind of commonly known as the 3-bite check or the 2-minute check. So lots of places in the industry run on that standard. Basically, once the starters go down, you should be kind of keeping an eye on the table, give them a minute or so, let them get a couple of bites in so that if there are any problems, they've encountered them, they've had time to encounter any problems, and then you can go back over and check. How is everything, guys? Everything good with your food? It's brilliant. Great. No worries. Off you go. Same thing again for mains. Should really be the same thing again for dessert, but obviously, if you've had no problems with your starter, no problem with your main, and your guest seems to be quite content from their body language, most servers aren't going to check on your desserts. There's just no need. Chances are everything's going to be absolutely fine. And if it isn't, by that point, you know your server well enough to say, oh, excuse me, this isn't quite right. Because they've already been kind of taking care of you throughout the meal and showing concern for your experience. But it's called the 3-bite check, which is why quite often you get that awkward incident where someone comes over to ask you how your food is whilst you're halfway through a mouthful.
Yes.
Which seems sort of to always happen, but it's actually very difficult to hit a table when no one has food in their mouth.
Yeah. On a similar note, are waiters aware of where you're at in a hilarious anecdote? Cause sometimes the table will be wrapped as I tell them a hilarious anecdote, and then the waiter comes over and ruins the punchline. Are you doing that on purpose?
We're not. I did it the other day myself and I hated myself for it because I could tell I had interrupted a really good story. It's one of those where sometimes I'll approach a table and if I can see that it's an awkward time, the best thing to do is swivel on your heel, even if you look a bit stupid doing it, and walk in the other direction and pop back a few minutes later. That there are times where that's not always a possibility. If it's a really busy service and you've kind of got two parties of food that need to go through the kitchen and you need to make sure that the previous table's okay before that happens, you can't always wait the extra 2 or 3 minutes for that story to finish. So you have to kind of weigh up those situations as you go. But yeah, it can be awkward, and I've done it a few times, and I've actually been brought into a few anecdotes before now where I've actually kind of found myself getting drawn into the story myself. So it can be an interesting experience. I've overheard some very interesting things at tables before, and there have been some very awkward moments.
Does anyone ever believe the line, "Oh, that was delicious, I'm just too full to eat it all"?
I do all the time, yeah. I kind of have to, because if I've come over and checked your food's okay and you've told me it's okay and then I come back later and you've not eaten it, my only real assumption is there wasn't anything wrong with the food. You must have been okay because you didn't call me over, and when I checked you said it was fine. So then if you then follow that up with, "Oh, it was lovely, I just couldn't finish it all," I'm going to be quite content with that and take you at your word, even if you're telling me a fib. And I would genuinely say, I know drifters maybe wouldn't want to pull anyone up on it, but if your food isn't right, please tell someone, especially if they come over and ask you, because there's nothing more irritating than going over to a table and saying, "Is everything okay with your food, guys? Oh, yes, it's lovely." And then when you go over to clear the plates, "Just to let you know, this steak was really tough and fatty and the chips were cold and my side salad didn't arrive on time." And then you have no other option really as a server than to kind of think, "Well, are you just looking to get money off your bill here?" Because I came over, I checked, I did everything I could have done to ensure you had a good experience, and you didn't do your bit. You didn't let me know genuinely if it was okay. You've waited till the end and now you're trying to complain to me about it. And that can be very demotivating as a server if you've gone out of your way to make sure they're happy with the experience.
And when the plates go back through those swinging doors, does everybody gather around in the kitchen and like look at the salad that you haven't eaten and thought, "Oh, guys,
they don't
wrong?
Do that.
Why didn't he like it?"
You get people examining food at times, yes. I did work with a pot wash once who liked to take all the scraps of meat off the plate to take home for her dog. So that was always fun, because we had weeks and weeks of her clearing all the meat off the plate and putting it in a box, and we had no idea what it was for. And then one day she explained to us that it was because she was feeding her dog. So that kind of made
that
sense.
That must have been a relief.
A long time. It was a relief, yeah. There were a few funny theories going around the restaurant for a while, so that was explained. Yeah, but I mean, if there's something wrong with a dish, the protocol really is to take it out and leave it on the pot wash, draw a manager's attention to it, and they should really go and examine the meal themselves to sort of validate the claim. If someone says, "You know, my burger's raw in the middle," you can't just throw that burger in the bin. Someone needs to go out and go, "Oh God, that is raw. That's really bad. How has that happened? What can we do to make sure it doesn't happen again?" And then obviously apologize to the guest and take the necessary measures. You know, because no one's perfect. Things do happen. Even places with the best food hygiene rating in the world, there are mistakes or things don't go quite right. So, you know, you have to be accountable for that.
Gordon also wants to know, is it okay to ask them to bring a card machine when they bring the bill?
Please don't do that. No.
Why?
Oh,
why?
This is
why?
Interesting.
So I have to say, as I've been through the industry through the years, as a general rule, I've noticed that guests have less and less and less patience these days. We've gone from a kind of a country where we're happy to wait for things to, "I want it now and I want it straight away and I'm busy and I've got things to do." And even the politest table can really spoil the impression they've given when they go, "Excuse me, can we get the bill, please? We want to go. And we'd like the card machine as well." It kind of reeks of, "We're done now. We need to leave. And no one else in this restaurant is as important as us going. It doesn't matter that that table need their food and that table need their order taken and those people are waiting for their drinks. We're fine. We've been sorted. And now we want to go as quickly as possible. So you want the bill, the card machine, and we want to leave." And that is quite often how it comes across. And it can actually seem quite rude and quite obnoxious.
You're like a cad at the end of a one-night stand.
Yes. Yeah, it can be very awkward. In the place I'm at the moment, lots of people will get up from their table and just walk to the bar, and they won't even speak to me. I'll be stood next to them at the table next to them, and they'll just get up and walk to the bar. And I go, "Sorry, guys, did you want the bill?" And they're like, "Oh, yeah, we need to go." okay, well, if you take a seat at the table, I'll be right over with you and I'll bring the bill over for you. Oh, okay, and can we get the card machine as well? Yeah, no problem, I'll bring it over. And even on those incidents, I will bring the bill separately and then I will go back to the station to grab the card machine and I will come back. The purpose being, you need to check your bill. If there's a problem with that bill, if I've made a mistake, if someone else's dinner has gone on there, or I've brought you the wrong bill, I've seen it lots of times where people are in a rush to leave and they've paid a bill that's not theirs, they've paid for things they didn't have, and then they're coming back in a couple of hours later, fuming and complaining that they've been ripped off and X, Y, and Z, and it's because they just haven't taken the time to check the bill.
Okay.
Right, so it's about allowing that bit of space. You get your bill, you've got a minute or two to have a look at it. If you want to discuss paying a service charge, not paying a service charge, tipping, have you got change on you? All those little things, you can take care of all of that while I'm wandering off to grab you a card machine. And then I'm going to pop right back over as soon as I can.
This is from Natalie in Wakefield. My husband always tells me off for tidying up the dirty plates at the end of the meal in a restaurant. I collect all the table's plates, scrape off any leftovers onto one plate and stack them all neatly to make it easier for the waiting staff. I only do this if I'm just with my husband and would never do it when with friends or any other guests. I suppose I do it out of habit as I'm always the one to tidy away the plates at home, but I also think I do it to be polite and helpful. Does this annoy the waiting staff? Do they think I'm a neurotic control freak who is doing their job for them? Or do they appreciate the help on a busy shift?
Personally, I appreciate it if it's done well. If you stack 9 plates on top of each other, that's going to be very, very heavy to lift. So it depends on how you go about it. And obviously, I'm not going to direct everyone on the perfect way to clear a table. Most waiters are quite happy to do a couple of journeys with a few plates, but it is always seen as very considerate, and I would always appreciate the effort. What normally goes through my head when I see someone do that, especially if it's a woman, I just think, mum, it's a mum. At home, she's used to scraping the plates, picking everything up after the kids, getting everything ready, taking it to the sink. And I kind of call that mum mentality. And I always kind of see that and think, oh, bless her, that's really kind of her to try and help me out. And sometimes it does make it more awkward, but quite often I'll just make a joke out of that. And quite often they'll say, oh, sorry, I stacked the plates. Is that okay? I go, well, a bit heavy, but no worries. I'll make 2 trips. So it's not a problem. It is appreciated, though. I don't know of anyone that would see somebody stacking the plates. I think, oh, you've made my life a lot more difficult there. It's always appreciated. On a little side note of mums, just to kind of go off on a slight tangent, if you've got children at the table, obviously they're going to make quite a lot of mess. Children do make quite a lot of mess. We're used to it. We expect it. But please don't leave your table like a bomb site. There's no excuse.
Oh.
Yeah. It's something that it irks a lot of waiters when you kind of go over and there's mess left everywhere.
Because we always offer. And then the waiter will usually say, no, please, we're used to it. It's fine. But I think the important thing is to offer.
Of course. I mean, if you've offered and the waiter said, oh, no, don't worry, we'll take care of that, take them at their word, of course. But the kind of extreme end of that is where I've seen people leaving mess everywhere. I had somebody the other week that actually changed their child in the nappy changing facility and then brought the dirty nappy back to the table in a bag and left it on the table for me to clear. And I've also had incidents where I've heard people sort of leave the restaurant in an absolute mess, even to the point where children are sort of taking cutlery and napkins off of other tables and things. And then they've said, oh, it's okay about the mess, we've left a tip. And I find that really insulting.
Right.
Okay.
So it's not a tax you pay for clearing up after your children.
Staying with the subject of children, Colin says, when I book a table at a restaurant for 4 people, 2 of which are my kids, is it then acceptable for me to order one meal for them to share, or do I have to order them one each and then end up eating 2.5 meals myself?
No, I think, depending on the age of the child, one meal is perfectly acceptable. If you feel that that's going to be enough for your 2 children, you go ahead. You know, there's no point wasting money on food you're not going to eat.
Okay. Let's move on to Tony. Might have covered this, but you definitely, when getting the attention of waiting staff, you definitely don't want clicking fingers. You definitely don't want gas on.
Not.
But then how do we do it?
So the nicest way is to just make eye contact. Any good server, and as I say, there are some out there that maybe aren't so good, but a good server is on top of their section. They know what every single table is doing. They're constantly looking to see if the guest is trying to attract their attention, and if there's anything they need. Sometimes just a bit of eye contact, a little nod of the head, just lifting the hand slightly off the table, not even putting your hand up, just kind of lifting it. So, excuse me, you know, that is all it needs. And any good server will see you. And if they can't get to you in that moment, most servers will just turn around and say, oh, sorry, give me 2 seconds and I'll be right back to you. You know, no need to click fingers. No need to kind of shout out names. Sometimes servers will tell you when they leave the table, once they've taken your order, they'll actually say, if you need anything, give me a wave. If you need anything, just shout for me. So quite often, just go with whatever they've said. But yeah, clicking fingers is a definite no-no. Okay. I've shot some very nasty looks at people before for clicking fingers.
Okay.
I feel like I have like a force field around me where I just can't get eye contact. I'm that person. I'm raising my eyes. I would never click fingers or wave or anything like that. But I'm sort of
have you tried raising a hand?
Oh, is that okay?
Hand.
Great. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about if I clap the hand?
Like an excuse me. So just sort of just up towards sort of shoulder level, especially if they're walking by, because that movement will catch them out of the corner of their eye. They'll think, what's going on over there?
I should jerk around
just
a little.
Just that sudden movement. And if you follow it up with the eye contact, if you're ready to make the eye contact and you lift your hand, they're going to look for the movement. And once they've looked in your direction, the eye contact there, excuse me, could I just get?
Good to know. Okay. Good to know.
Now, you've said that... it's totally fine to send food back that's not good enough. Mm. Are there any occasions at all in your long history where, out of spite, something has been done to the food before it comes back again?
Certainly not, no.
Never. Oh, so that's a complete myth. Never happens.
Because
no, certainly not. I mean, I'm not going to say it doesn't happen. I've never seen it happen myself. I've heard some stories. I think quite often the imagination runs wild of how bad things could be. And however wild the imagination would run, it could never be that bad.
You often hear this sort of urban myth about a gentleman chef using part of his anatomy to produce a particular fluid. I'm always sceptical as to how easy it would be to perform in that situation.
It would be incredibly hard, and in a very hot, sweaty kitchen, not somewhere you'd particularly want to be doing
it.
Surrounded
by colleagues. Yeah.
Right in front of your colleagues on the line on a busy Saturday night. Not the place to go about it.
No. Okay.
Okay. Also from Tony, if we enter a restaurant and we're not sure whether we should seat ourselves or wait to be seated, what's the protocol?
Always wait.
Always wait. Yeah. If in doubt,
always
wait.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, because again, it's our job to make you comfortable and to look after your experience. So if you're stood at the door feeling like a bit of a lemon, and normally we would expect you to seat yourselves, we're not going to leave you standing there. Someone will pop over and go, hi guys, can we get you a table? Simple as. My general rule is to kind of wait. Much better to wait and have someone come over to you and sit you down and take care of your needs than for you to sit yourselves down and you've sat yourself at an awkward table or a table that's not laid and ready for you. There could be lots of things that could go wrong by you sitting yourself. Whereas if you wait to be seated, that will always be seen as kind of polite and sort of waiting your turn and all those sort of things. So my personal advice would always be to wait. And I've been in that situation where I've gone to kind of cool, trendy little places and I stood there for a minute or 2 minutes and thought, oh, am I supposed to sit down? Am I not supposed to sit down? In the back of my head, little voice always says, just wait, someone will come over to you.
Okay. The last two questions are from me. Jeff's already said that I'm tight. Do you judge people who order the cheapest wine on the list? And is it true that the second cheapest is actually the worst wine?
It would depend on the wine list. I know of no wine list that's ever been put together where they've specifically chosen the second cheapest wine, made sure it's not as nice as the first one or the rest of the wines and put it second on the menu. It's quite often done more for sort of readability or by cost. The cheapest one on the menu, as a waiter, from my experience, most of the time, that's what I'm expecting people to order. Most people are going to either know what they like and they're going to order a very common wine, which most places will stock because they want to sell it. So your whites, your Pinot Grigio, or your Sauvignon Blanc, people are going to know that that's likely to be on the menu. Restaurants know that. They put one on the menu because they know people are going to ask for it. So it tends to go by trend. If not, most people will just say, we'll have a bottle of white, we'll take the house white. And that's normally what I would expect most people to ask for. Because even though I've kind of done some wine training and stuff in my career, I'm still not as au fait with wine as I would like to be. And I think a lot of people feel very awkward about that. And as such, they just ask for the cheapest wine. And as a server, in my experience, that's what most people do. They just ask for the house wine or the cheap wine, or, you know, we'll just have that one, and they'll just point to the first wine on the list.
Okay. And what do you think of people when they taste the wine, comment on the flavour and don't just nod their head and go, yes, great. Because it's just to check it's corked, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just to make sure that the wine hasn't gone off. So wine etiquette in general, if it's a corked wine, your server should always ask if you'd like to try the wine. And it's not so much about the flavour. I mean, by all means, enjoy the flavour and the aroma before kind of saying, yes, that's what I want. But it's less about, oh, I approve of the wine. It's more of, yes, that's fine to serve. It hasn't gone off while it's been sat on the shelf. If it's a screw cap wine or a wax sealed wine, there really is no reason it should have gone off. So quite often, depending on the sort of place that you're eating, if it's not a corked wine, most servers will be pouring the wine for you, but they will do it more out of kind of etiquette rather than the fact that there's a need to do it.
Okay. Well, that's us finished.
Well, it is. Apart from, I just want to, are you one of these waiters who doesn't write it down, who keeps the order in their head?
I am one of those waiters who pretty much remembers what you've ordered, but I will scribble down on my pad to make you feel more comfortable.
Oh, it gives me such anxiety. I mean, I understand that it's impressive and you're making the job more interesting for yourself, but I'm just like just sitting there until the mains come out, just thinking something's going to go wrong. And I'd say like more than 50% of the time, something does go slightly wrong.
So it's the chicken scratch. I've got chicken scratch. So I tend to write the whole meal out in full incredibly quickly. So the full title of the meal, but I'll write it down really quickly in a very large sort of swirl, which barely makes sense to me or anybody else. And then I'll get back to the till, do it mostly from memory, forget something, look at the pad and think, what have I written? That makes no sense whatsoever. Then I'll look over my shoulder, stare at the person for a second or two, look back at the pad and go, oh yeah, that's what they ordered. Okay. And it will go through the till. Yeah, most servers, if they've been doing it for a while, don't really need a pad and pen. But we do it more to make sure that everyone feels comfortable that their order has been taken properly. And any good server should repeat your order back to you. So if it's a large table, then they might wait till the end of the order being taken and say, so we've got three of these, two of those. You're having this, sir. You're having that, madam. And all the way through. Or what I like to do is just repeat it back as people say it to me.
Yeah.
I'm going to have the cheeseburger. Brilliant. One cheeseburger. Just so that you know I've heard what you said, and that's your chance to go, oh no, sorry, not that one, the chicken burger, not the cheeseburger. Oh, sorry, my mistake, no worries, one chicken burger.
How good are you at guessing what somebody's going to order by looking at them?
Quite good, yeah. It's one of those, isn't it? It's confirmation bias. It's the amount of times I think I know what someone's going to order.
Right.
And then they order it and they go, yeah, knew you were going to order that. The amount of times that I think they're going to order it and they don't, and I forget that they didn't order what I thought they were going to say. It's one of those, but quite often you can tell. There are certain people where if they order a certain dish, you know they're going to ask for a certain type of sauce. There are lots of little sort of patterns that people fit into. We all like to think we're quite unique, but actually, including myself, we all kind of go for little trends and probably don't realise that we sort of settle in little groups of diner. There are certain dishes that I know if someone orders something that's breaded chicken, they're going to ask me for barbecue sauce. But there's all little weird sort of things like that you know are going to happen.
Well, we're pretty much at the end. If you had to give sort of one last thought for drifters in particular in restaurants, what would that be?
That's a tough one.
You know, I mean, you listen to this podcast, you hear people getting themselves worked up about these interactions that they're having with people working in restaurants. What's the wisdom you can impart, just sort of a generalized wisdom?
Yeah, I mean, the main thing I would say is kind of relax and let your server look after you. That's what they're there for. Don't worry, don't threat, you know, kind of be guided by them. As I said earlier, we do this a lot. It's what we do day in, day out with our eyes closed, without it being a problem. You know, if you're awkward in your conversation, we'll be able to make up for it because we've been making conversation all day, every day. around this table. So if you feel a bit awkward, don't worry, it's going to brush us straight by and we're just going to carry on and get on with the job at hand. So kind of don't overthink it. You're out to enjoy yourself. Let your server guide you. Listen to what they're asking you. Let them kind of take control of the meal and give you what you need. And don't be afraid to ask. At the end of the day, we are there to serve. So if you need something, as long as you're polite and friendly, you're never going to run into a problem.
Secret waiter, thank you so much.
You're more than welcome. Thank you.
And that was our podcast. Thank you for listening and thank you to The Secret Waiter. We hope you enjoyed that episode. Let us know what you thought. And also, if there are other professions where you would like somebody to come on and give you the inside track, then maybe that's something we could do, a couple of times a year.
Hotel worker.
Yeah. Oh. So, yeah, hotel worker would be great. Oh. Yeah. So any of these, do feel free to suggest. It's hello@adriftpodcast.com. Thanks to Man and the Echo for the backing music. And I finished just by reiterating, 6%. 6%. Podication time. This comes from Helen Shrewsbury, who says, I live in New Zealand, having emigrated here over 20 years ago from the UK, and I'm a keen listener and a socially awkward drifter. We do occasionally get non-socially awkward drifters, yeah. But they're few and far between. My husband, Stephen Prendergast, and I will be flying to the... That's a good name, isn't it? Prendergast.
Isn't it? Yeah. I love it.
I'll be flying to the UK in a few weeks' time, 6th of March. So I'm currently downloading early episodes of the podcast for the long flight. We're at the start of a lifetime dream, and I would love a podication on or around the 27th of February. So we're a day early, right?
On or around, yeah.
Thereabouts. I mean, we can't adjust the date of the podcast.
No, sorry.
As this is Steve's birthday, a birthday that coincidentally... he shared with my late mother, a wonderful woman whom Steve never met, as I had only just met him when my mum passed away 2.5 years ago. The two of these beautiful people have enabled us to fulfil our dream to buy a boat in Europe and live on board as we slowly sail back to New Zealand, exploring many wonderful countries as we make our slow passage back. That sounds sounds brilliant.
Yeah.
I met a couple in the summer who, I think they were both doctors, and they'd taken 2 years out of the career to sail a catamaran with their two kids.
Oh, wow.
I think a daughter of about 6 and a son of about 4. You know, across the Atlantic, and we were in a place in New York, in Long Island, and they were there, and then they were off to the Caribbean next. But they'd been all over. It just seemed idyllic.
Wow.
So exciting that
you're
doing
this.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be good at like all the pulling the ropes.
No,
and
me
stuff,
neither. That's what I was worrying about.
Steve and I were married on the 18th of January on a remote hillside overlooking Akaroa Harbour in the South Island on a friend's property with a good friend conducting the ceremony. That sounds wonderful. It was a truly special day, not only because I married a man I love with all my heart who makes me laugh and loves me unconditionally, but because it was in front of close family and friends, many of whom we will not see again for several years as we start our adventures on your side of the world. What a thing. I'm a bit overwhelmed. I don't know, I'm easily overwhelmed, but a bit overwhelmed by this story.
Look at the photo. Look, there's a photo for you to look at.
Oh, let's see.
I know, it looks amazing.
Oh, wow. This is a photo of the wedding. And I mean, it sounds every bit as idyllic as... they describe it. You know, sometimes when you read things like this, you think, yeah, but I bet it wasn't as nice as you're making out it is. And then you look at this photo and it looks even more spectacular and they look so joyful. Wow. I want Steve to know that together we will conquer the fears and dramas that lay ahead of us. I'm looking forward to living in the moment and watching the numerous sunrises and sunsets together as we explore the many new lands that we will be blown to along our journey and continue to be entertained by a drift as we ourselves drift through the oceans. Thank you. And yeah, she says, I attach a photo of the ceremony which sums up the happiness of her wedding day. It really does. Yeah. It's just a fantastic photo. You both look just like you're in your element. Well, there we go. This is quite the thing you're embarking on.
A big adventure.
I'm guessing seasick. These don't seem like people will be getting seasick, do they?
You can get those bands, can't you?
That's what I was going to suggest. Yeah, get a band. But have a wonderful time. I mean, can you let us know how it goes? Can you get in touch via Portishead Radio? Could you send out something by a Morse code? I don't know. But, I mean, updates would be great. I mean, just a couple of years.
Mm, yeah, that'd be lovely.
And some more photos.
Yeah, oh, yes, please.
Congratulations. Happy birthday to Steve. And, you know, great memories of your mum. And I just think you're in for this is the stuff of a lifetime, isn't it? What a great thing to be doing. So there we go. Latest edition of the podcast from dedicated to Helen Shrewsbury. I'm so distracted by the story. I'm getting all my words jumbled up. And I was up at 3:45 this morning. It's the other reason. The other reason I'm getting so emotional as well. Helen Shrewsbury to Stephen Prendergast. Bon voyage.
Yes.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.